le pain venu. Thank you. Am I audible?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Good. Thank you for inviting me to your festival. And I've enjoyed listening to several souls expressing themselves in words and in rhythm. And it's a pity I can't be in Cork, a city I'm fond of. But here I am, the next best thing, in Zoom, which seems to me tremendous. I'm Stone Age, technically. And my wife is standing nearby in case I press the wrong button. But and I'm going to read, I think you asked me for about half an hour. I've enjoyed the brevity of most of the poems that have been read. So I hope you'll bear with me for half an hour. And I thought I would read some old poems from my youth, and then read from my new book. So the first poem, looking out the window at the snow and the frost, this seems a good enough one to begin with. I wrote it in 1965, a long time ago, when I was about 24. And it's called Persephone. Now, Persephone ate the seed of the forbidden pomegranate, and her punishment was to be confined underground for 6 months, and then the other 6 months she would come up among us again. So in a way, it's a mythological explanation of summer and winter. Persephone. I see, as through a skylight in my brain, the mole strew its buildings in the rain. The swallows turn above their broken home, and all my acres in delirium. Straight-jacketed by cold and numb-skulled, now sleep the well-adjusted and the skilled. The bat folds its wing like a winter leaf, the squirrel in its hollow holds aloof. The weasel and ferret, the stoat and fox, move hand in glove across the equinox. I can tell how softly their footsteps go. Their footsteps borrow silence from the snow. And another poem from my youth, a love poem. And this was something I watched when I was sitting at the bank of the canal in Dublin, the Grand Canal, and two swans came and proceeded to mate in front of me very obligingly. And here's my poem about them. It has two beautiful English words, cob, the male swan, and pem, the female swan. Swans mating. Even now, I wish that you had been there, sitting beside me on the riverbank, the cob and his pem sailing in rhythm until their small heads met and the final heraldic moment dissolved in ripples. This was a marriage and a baptism, a holding of breath, nearly a drowning. Wings spread wide for balance where he trod, her feathers full of water and her neck under the water like a bar of light. Now, I've said somewhere that I believe that at the center of the poetic enterprise is love poetry, and that if poetry is a wheel, the hub of the wheel is love poetry, and branching out from the hub like spokes are love of children, love of nature, love of land, love of everything else. And here's a poem. It's six quatrains, it's 24 lines long, And its central resolving image is the bleach green. This poem is called The Linen Industry. And in the olden days, they used to lay out the material when it had been woven in a bleach green to bleach in the sun, so that at the height of summer, it would appear that there'd been a fall of snow. The linen industry. Pulling up flax after the blue flowers have fallen, and laying our handfuls in the peaty water to rot those grasses to the bone, or building stooks that recall the skirts of an invisible dancer. We become a part of the linen industry and follow its processes to the grubby town, where fields are compacted into window boxes and there is little room among the big machines. But even in our attic under the skylight, we make love on a bleach green, the whole meadow draped with material turning white in the sun, as though snow reluctant to melt were our attire. What's passion but a battering of stubborn stalks, then a gentle combing out of fibres like hair, and a weaving of these into christening robes, into garments for a marriage or funeral. Since it's like a bereavement once the labour's done, to find ourselves last workers in a dying trade, let flax be our matchmaker, our undertaker, the provider of sheets for whatever the bed. And be shy of your breasts in the presence of death. Say that you look more beautiful in linen, wearing white petticoats, the bow on your bodice, a butterfly attending the embroidered flowers. And a poem, this is probably my best known poem in August, I think it was 1994, there were talks that it would be an IRA ceasefire. I was reading the Iliad, our greatest poem about war and death. I was reading the episode where the old king of Troy, Priam, is very brave. He plucks up courage and he wanders out to the tent of Achilles to beg from Achilles the body of his son Hector, whom Achilles has killed in combat. Ceasefire. Put in mind of his own father and moved to tears, Achilles took him by the hand and pushed the old king gently away. But Priam curled up at his feet and wept with him until their sadness filled the building. Taking Hector's corpse into his own hands, Achilles made sure it was washed and, for the old king's sake, laid out in uniform, ready for Priam to carry, wrapped like a present, home to Troy at daybreak. When they had eaten together, it pleased them both to stare at each other's beauty as lovers might. Achilles built like a god, Priam good-looking still and full of conversation, who earlier had sighed, "I get down on my knees and do what must be done and kiss Achilles' hand, the killer of my son." And when you've been at it as long as I have, but God knows I've been writing poetry for 60 years, you're entitled to have a favourite poem. And I'm going to read my favourite poem of mine. It's called Harmonica. And I remember when I was a schoolboy, I brought home a mouth organ, a harmonica. And my dad I'd never heard him play anything before. He picked it up and he played it quite well. And he was telling me that he served in the trenches of the First World War. And during lulls, he and others taught themselves the harmonica, and they improvised little marching bands. And I wanted for some years to write about this, but I couldn't find the way to do it. And then, I don't know, it was a lucky chance. I was reading a book about the early Greek philosophers, and Anaximenes believed that air was the basis of all creation, and he breathed life into this poem. It's only 7 lines long, but it's still my favorite. Harmonica. A Tommy drops his harmonica in no man's land. My dad, like old Anaximenes, breathes in and out through the holes and reeds and finds this melody. Our souls are air. They hold us together. Listen. A music hall favorite lasts until the end of time. My dad is playing it. His breath contains the world. The wind is playing an orchestra of harmonicas. And the poem, the last 12, 15 years, my grandchildren have featured Lard. I've written a lot of poems about them. And it occurred to me that there aren't that many poems about grandchildren. And that's probably because most poets don't live long enough to have grandchildren. But here's one about my first grandson called Ben. And he arrived in the Corrigskeewaun cottage when there'd been a cloudburst. The landscape was flooded. The little river Owen or Donon was in spate. And the only way he could get up with his father was in Paddy Morrison's tractor, a neighbour's tractor. And I wrote this poem about his first arrival in Corrigskeewaun, the townland we go to every year in Mayo, the Leveret, for my grandson Ben. This is your first night in Corrigskeewaun. The Owen or Donon is so full of rain, you arrived in Paddy Morrison's tractor, a bumpy approach in your father's arms to the cottage where, all of 1 year ago, you were conceived, a fire seed in the hearth. Did you hear the wind in the fluffy chimney? Do you hear the wind tonight and the rain and a shorebird calling from the mussel reefs? Tomorrow, I'll introduce you to the sea, little hoplite. Have you been missing it? I'll park your chariot by the otter's rock and carry you over seaweed to the sea. There's a tufted duck on David's Lake with her suit full of hatchlings, pom-poms a day old, and already learning to dive. We may meet the stoat near the erratic boulder, a shrew in his mouth, or the merlin meadow pipit hunting. But don't be afraid. The leveret breakfasts under the fuchsia every morning, and we shall be watching. I have picked wild flowers for you, scabious and centaury, in a jam jar of water that will bend and magnify the daylight. This is your first night in Corrigskeewaun. And I'll now read from the new book, which I hold up, available in all good bookshops. Its title comes from a genius line of Dylan Thomas, for the sake of the souls of the slain birds sailing. And the book's called The Slain Birds. And I'll stay with my grandson, Ben, because when he was about 9 or 10 years later after the Liverpool, I took him out botanizing. And I remember showing him this little modest little flower called sneezewort. And he drew it and he wrote the name. And I wrote this poem about it, sneezewort. Now that the virus keeps us apart, I try to remember exactly where I introduced my first grandson years ago to this unassuming supposed cure for cough and cold. And he drew a picture of it above spindly letters, sneezewort. Petals arranged like a daisy's around a grey and yellow eye that might irradiate sickness. Was it where a runnel murmurs into the lake without a name? And this one, the first poem in the new book, it's called Tony Owl. And my granddaughters, Amelia and Maisie, found this on their way back from school, a Tony Owl that had been killed by a car. And they buried it. And I mention a couple of words that maybe need an explanation. Smudging is a purifying ceremony. And I refer to a great ornithological photographer, Eric Hosking, who lost his eye photographing a tawny owl. So this is a kind of a sonnet. Tawny owl. At least the motorist who stunned the owl stopped and lifted the body onto the verge. And there Amelia and Maisie found it. A friend will soak the wings in salty water to make shaman fans for smudging rites. Another wants the skull for her collection and will have to bury it for one whole year. Why are there no tawny owls in Ireland? Do you know that Eric Hosking photograph of the tawny that robbed him of an eye? Rage and terror cramped between the branches. Maisie sketches in charcoal its underside. Amelia hugs to herself all the feathers. I will look after you, poor owl, she sighs. And here's a poem inspired by Amelia, when she was 7, made out of fuse wire and a skewer, a barbecue skewer, a model and buttons, a model of the solar system. Amelia's model. In her model of the solar system, my 7-year-old cosmologist ties to a barbecue skewer with fuse wire the planets' buttons. For Venus, an ivory button, Mercury, silver beside the sun, mother of pearl for Jupiter, red and green for Mars and Earth. For Saturn's rings, a pipe cleaner, so that in the outer darkness close to the kitchen, her brown eyes represent Uranus, Neptune. Amelia, you didn't include Pluto in your wire sculpture of the solar system. Tiny and very far away, an ice world of ice mountains and methane snow, a dance of five moons unlit by the sun, the god of the afterlife's kingdom. We shall go there when we die, dear child. And I discovered, much to my delight, in the back garden here, a flower that looked a little bit like Lily of the Valley, but it was in fact Solomon's seal. And in this poem, I quote Solomon from the Old Testament. And I think that's all I need to say about it. But it's another kind of sonnet called Solomon's Seal. Shaded by the self-seeded, I'll begin again. I'll take a glass of water, if I may. Not a glass, a sip of a glass of water. Solomon's Seal. Shaded by the self-seeded hazels, in a back corner of our garden, to the right of the flowering currant, an unexpected Solomon's seal I want to show you. Does it matter why such graceful bells are so called? Seals of a medieval document? It's May, and Solomon says, rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. Winter is past. The rain is over and gone. Flowers appear on the earth. A solitary cowslip, a solitary cowslip has survived under our beach, the first grass cutting. The time of the singing of birds is come. And my penultimate poem is called Totem. One of the reasons we moved into this house was the great beech tree in the back garden. It's about nearly 300 years old. But I had to get a tree surgeon in to lower it a bit because it was threatening neighbors' houses. And then I imagined when the branches had been cut up into logs, I imagined those logs being built into a totem pole with carvings of all the animals that I've, or some of the animals that I've written about obsessively in my long career. And this is another 14-liner, totem. When the tree surgeon cut away from our top heavy beech, a ton, I assembled in my mind's eye logs as a star-surrounded totem pole with carvings of all the creatures. Concussed tawny owl, sleepy pot-bellied badger, otter drowned in the eel trap, Rosemary's donkeys, Emma's punctual frogs, hares and stoats playing scary games around the erratic boulder. Oh, all in a ghost dance with my twin brother and the dead poets and my warrior father and my mother with her limp. And I'll close with a poem from the book before that, which was called The Candlelight Master. And it's called after Amargin. Now, most of you will know that Amargin was the legendary bard of the Ulster cycle. And he wrote what many people consider the first poem in Irish. And it goes something like, I am the wind, I am the sea, I am a wave, I am the spindrift on the wave, I am this, I am that. And this is my refraction or reflection of that. I use that formula. And thank you again for inviting me to read, and thank you for listening to my words. And this evening reminds me just how important it is to read poetry aloud, that poetry existed long before alphabets were invented. The Iliad and the Odyssey were recited by heart. It's hard to believe, but that's the case. So I've enjoyed reading to you and enjoyed listening to you read. After Amargin. I am the trout that vanishes between the stepping stones. I am the elver that lingers under the little bridge. I am the leveret that breakfasts close to the fuchsia hedge. I am the stoat that dances around the erratic boulder. I am the skein of sheep's wool, wind and barbed wire tangle. I am the mud and spittle that make the swallow's nest. I am the stonechat's music of pebble striking pebble. I am the overhead raven with his eye on the lamb's eye. I am the night flying whimbrel that whistles down the chimney. I am the pipistrelle bat at home among constellations. I am the raindrop enclosing fairy flax or brookweed. I am water lily blossom and autumn lady's tresses. I am the thunderstorm that penetrates the keyhole. I am the sooty hailstone melting by the fireside. I am the otter's holt and the badger's set in the dunes. I am the badger drowning at springtide among flotsam. I am the otter dying on top of the burial mound.
Thanks again.
Thank you very much.